Mark chapter 7, please, if I could have Mark 7. Most of you have been around here more or less. I have spent a day or two on this chapter so far. Is that right? Last week, we discerned, at least on last Wednesday night, at least one of us in the room, the guy you're looking at, discerned something important. After having spoken two Sunday nights on the subject of legalism, remember, look up here, legalism light, legalism, true legalism, pure legalism, a legalism light, liberalism light, which can never answer this question, if you love me, and they just kind of, no, because it's all emotion and religion, but it never gets down to obedience. By the way, and then on the left side, the farther you go to the left, you become truly liberal. You know, and this movement tends to move that way, and this one moves that way. Now, I'm not going to preach any of that again except to say one thing. What I learned Wednesday night was this. Everybody thinks they're okay because they're in the middle. We're going to see about that tonight. Because I think the remnants of one side or the other stay with us for a long time. And I think how we know that is we start seeing how we react to certain things. When we have certain problems, look at me, what do we do? Okay. Verse 14. We've already dealt, of course, with this thing about how the traditions of the elders and all of that. And we get to verse 14, and it says, "And when he had called all the people unto him, he said unto them, Hearken, listen unto me, every one of you, and do what?" Understand is a very different concept than just hearing something. Understanding means you're actually able to explain something, put things together. That's a different level. He says, "Hearken unto me, listen unto me, every one of you, and understand. There is nothing from without a man that entereth into him can defile him. But the things which come out of him, those are they that defile him, the man. If any man have ears to hear, let him hear." Verse 17. And by the way, verse 16 is not in all Greek manuscripts. So if you're reading any other modern version, verse 16 is not there. I'm not going to discuss it, I'm just stating it. Verse 17, "And when he entered into the house from the people, his disciples asked him concerning the parable." I find that very ironic because I didn't think he told a parable. Did you? Look up here. All he said was, stuff out there cannot defile you. It's what comes out of the heart that defiles you, not stuff out there. Here's what's weird. They didn't get that, and they call that a what? Huh? Parable? By the way, who was calling it a parable? Whose disciples? We're pretty slow when it comes on the uptick of things sometimes. Continue. "And he saith unto them, Are you so without understanding also? Do you not perceive that whatsoever thing from without entereth into a man, it cannot defile him? Because it entereth not into his what?" By the way, you better be careful about how you read this, because, you know, modern idiots read this a different way than Jesus is intending, of course. But we'll get to that later. He says it doesn't get to the heart. It just goes into the belly, and it goes out in the drought. Which, by the way, in modern English doesn't mean anything. Drought is a word that means the privy. How does that sound? Is that clear enough? The privy. Do I need to say anything else? The loo, the water closet, the comfort room, whatever term you want to use. That's what the word means in Greek. And then this next phrase, which we'll look at later, is very odd. It's like a hanging phrase in Greek. Purging all meat is the wrong translation, of course. It doesn't mean steak. It's talking about solid food. Somehow all solid food is now clean, purged. He goes on to say in verse 20, and he said, "That which cometh out of the man, that defileth the man. For from within, out of the what? Proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy." By the way, an evil eye has many repercussions, but minimally it means this. You look at people and you wish God's worst in their life. How does that sound? Do you have people like that? Answer the question, yes. You have people you wouldn't mind if their whole life got upended. Jesus says that comes from within. Continue. Oh, you guys are being awful pious tonight, acting like you don't have anybody like that. Okay. He goes on to say, blasphemy, pride, foolishness, all these evil things come from within and defile the man. Tonight we're going to look at the end of legalism, or welcome to heart religion. My daughter last night texted me something. She texted me and then she called me. When she called me, do you want me to speak the truth or lie? Which would you prefer? Answer the question. Really? When she called me and told me what she called and said, there was a small piece of my being, Amy, I'm sorry to say this, there was a little bit, not all of me, not 100%, but at least 1%, that had a little bit of a grin on my face. You say, why? Because I'm sinful, like you. I am glad sometimes when my enemies fall. How about you? Where does that come from? Where does it come from? It's a heart matter. Well, the problem was, it didn't make sense what she was telling me, so I went down to the computer and I looked up what it was. And she had told me there was a pastor at the church Brian used to go to that was arrested for child pornography and other things. And she was partially right. Look me in the eyes, except the man that was arrested, rightly so, was a friend of mine. Not from that church, but from a church with a similar name. You look me in the eyes, from Brent over here to the young lady back here, to Atong here, to Pam here, you play your religious games. And that's all it is religion. A friend of mine is going to spend the rest of his life in prison. You say, that could never happen to me. I don't know how it happens to anybody. Except I do know this. It starts in that place that you're hiding. And by the way, if you have a cell phone, you have an entire world to hide from because your parents won't look at it. And your spouse will, and everybody is, All right, we're going to look at this tonight. I'm not going to talk about that. It makes me so sick. I was sad because there was sin in my own heart, not being happy that something happened, because I don't really want that to ever happen, period. But there was that little piece of me that would have rejoiced if it had been the right people. And by the way, I've been around this church a long time, and I've seen the filth in this church from the heart. And people that hold on to bitterness for 20 years that I have been here and think it's okay. By the way, the problem is here. Let's pray. We're going to get started. Father, I ask your blessings on this night. I don't want this to be all serious in the sense that we go away discouraged tonight. I want us to go away understanding that this thing that we have with you is not some kind of formal religion. It's not the emotions. It's not the motions we go through. It's not sleeping our way through life. It is a living, transforming, heart-to-heart relationship that ought to constantly shine lights on the inner recesses of our sinfulness. And the grace of God ought to get into places that nobody knows about, including me, the individual. Help us to hear tonight, I ask, and I ask this in Christ's name, amen. You may be seated. We'll start off this conversation tonight very easily. In your notes, there are two things that I am very convinced of, and I realize sometimes I say things and do things from the pulpit, and I realize that most church members are used to the pastor just basically patting them every week and being nice. I tend to come back from the medical profession. I think all of us have some heart disease. and it shows up. So I tend to go after that heart disease. In your notes, this is medical, obviously, but I'm a physician of souls. That's what God has called me to be. Diagnosis, when you go see a doctor or a pastor, or the Word of God. Treatment and prognosis. And prognosis is this. If you have found out what the disease state is and you give the right treatment, the prognosis is things will be okay. So diagnosis, treatment, and prognosis are always related. Duh. Those three things are always related. Number two, if wrong on the diagnosis, what if you're wrong on the diagnosis? As I say, if you're wrong on the diagnosis, then you're wrong on the treatment and the prognosis. It is almost impossible to be wrong with what the problem is and treat the problem. If you don't get to the diagnosis, you can't get to the treatment, you can't get to the hope side of this, where you realize God can do something. Now, make this personal in my life. My older sister called me last March. Amy, what day did you and Aronius get married? The 29th. It might have been early April. Yeah, it's been like a year or something, a year and a half. Okay, Amy was married sometime in March of a year and a half ago or so. Sometime in late March or early April, my older sister called me and made these almost exact words. She said, "Ralph, Mom seems to be getting worse." She said, "The more therapy Mom gets, the worse she becomes." This all started, most of you know, it started the week of Amy's, I almost said birthday, but it's her wedding, her and Aaron's wedding. On that week, I'm not sure which day, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, my mother was home alone. My sister was going to pick her up and bring her up to Chicago area, up here for the wedding. My mother was home. I don't know what she was doing. She decided to go down the steps. Now, the steps are very steep, but my nephew, on the steps going down, platform, and all the way to the basement, he walled them in. He put carpet on the walls. Carpet on, everything is carpeted, so it's soft. We thought that would help. Problem is, it helps, but Mom still tripped. I don't know if she did this. We're not sure where she fell because she doesn't remember. She just remembers she's pretty much at the bottom of the steps. She's hit her head. Now, when I see her from a photo from my sister, it looks like somebody is taking a baseball bat and hit her at a full tilt on the top of the head. Is that right? She is black and blue, the worst I have ever seen anybody in the face. It really wasn't in the face, though. It hit her on the top. Your skin is loose, and the blood flowed down into the eyes, basically. And she looked bad. Well, she's going to come to the wedding. She wants to see Amy get married. She gets up here, and Mom's not feeling good. The day of the wedding, Mom doesn't think she can walk down the aisle. So Mom has me walk my mother down the aisle. And then when I get done with that, I come back and walk Amy down the aisle. She goes home. By the way, the doctors diagnosed her. Listen to this. When the doctors did an x-ray of her head, they diagnosed her as just falling. They said they did an x-ray of her frontal skull and it was fine, but Mom's pain increased. So when she went home in late March, early April, she started having therapy. After a period of time, when look at me, my sister kept saying, "My mother is getting worse," the doctor said she probably had a stroke. By the way, my mother would be paralyzed if it wasn't for somebody keep pushing that idiot doctors. I told my sister she has no symptoms of strokes. Strokes have symptoms. You do know that. You get one on one side or you get one on the other side. One side symptomatic, one, the other side. You say, what happens if both sides are symptomatic? This is what happens. DEAD. If you have that massive of a stroke, you just die. I said, "Rita, she doesn't have symptoms of a stroke." All through April, my mother got worse. My sister and I talked two or three times a week, and she would keep saying, "I take Mom to therapy, and when she goes to therapy, she's worse than when she went." Finally, late April, maybe early May, my sister called me and said, "Mom can't walk anymore." She went from totally on her own, living by herself, to not walking, she says, I have to put her in a wheelchair. I said, Rita, there's something going on. Finally, in the middle to the end of May, I don't know the exact date, middle of May, they finally took her back in. They did an x-ray and I believe a CAT scan. And after, look at me in the eyes, 2 months, found out, think about this, her spine was broken. And what was the treatment they were giving her? Therapy. So they had her exercising with a broken spine. So of course she got worse. Duh. She got a lot worse. When my wife and I saw her, when we went to see the surgeon in Springfield, my mother was in a wheelchair. Her feet were beginning to curl under. She was asked to move her legs. She had no movement in her legs, her feet. She could move some of her fingers like this. And I'm like, in all this time, they have been giving her treatment, which made the problem worse. Hear me, friend. Diagnosis, treatment, and prognosis are connected. If you're wrong on what's wrong with you, you're going to be wrong on what you do, and you're going to be wrong on what you get. Well, when they made the correct diagnosis, Jenny and I was there, my brother was there, my two sisters was there, I think Jean was there too, Shirley's husband, I don't remember, but we were a bunch of us there, saw the doctor, and the doctor said, I don't give her a lot of hope, she's 82 years old, she has a broken spine, it's been broken for 2 months. But I tell you what, look me in the eyes, it was a whole lot better when you have the correct diagnosis and you treat the problem than when you let the problem get worse by mistreating it. Look in your notes. Tonight, we're just going to look at this text. Legalist, and I mean legalist light or legalism, either one. This text is primarily about legalist light and legalism. We've already talked about liberalism light and liberals. You know, we don't need to discuss those again. That was in previous 2 weeks. Mark chapter 7. And when he had called the people unto him, he said unto them, hearken unto me, every one of you, and understand. The number one thing he wanted them to get was to understand something. He says, there is nothing from without a man that entereth into him can defile him, but the thing which comes out of him, those are the thing they that defile the man. If any man hath ears to hear, let him hear. And when he was entered into the house from the people, his disciples asked him concerning the parable. And he, I can just see Jesus shaking his head saying, are you so without understanding? Do you not perceive? Don't you get it? Number one, legalists don't get it. Here's your takeaway. Make sure you get it. My friend, if you're in this church, make sure you get it. Don't sit here for year after year after year and not get what's preached. If something's taught, do it. But a legalist never gets it. They never get anything. They just sit in church and nod because they're good. Everything's fine. By the way, the liberal light does the same, but for different reasons. In your notes, thoughts. This seems simple. Does to me anyhow. I think I've said this probably 100 times in this church. Drinking is not the problem, it's why you drink. Let me say that again. Drinking is not the problem, it's why you drink. And if you quit drinking and don't deal with a why, you pass on the why to your children and they start drinking. Hello? That's well known. It's called dry drunk syndrome, folks. The issue is, to me, this seems pretty simple. Jesus is saying the same thing everybody should know. The problem is within us. But boy, they don't get it. They're like, huh? What are you talking about? This seems simple in your notes. This seems rather direct. Next, they didn't get it. They just didn't get it. They probably were thinking about, who knows? If I say in a modern church setting, please look up here. If I say in a modern church setting, it's not those things without that defile you, it's from within that defiles you. I'm going to have the beer drinkers, excuse the crudity, the hell raisers, the drunks, and all of the junk that goes with that say, there you go, Pastor Warren, I guess it's okay to drink. Well, then try drinking some Drano. See how that works. I didn't hear an amen. By the way, you don't put poison in your body. You don't do something that ruins your liver. You don't ever, ever, ever bring something into your mind, in your heart, that ever takes this mind and damages its ability to think. By the way, what's the nature of being sober? Clear thinking. What does alcohol do, Tom? Takes away your ability to think clearly. Don't be stupid. But by the way, it still goes back to the same thing. Why do you want to drink? I'm just going to stomp all over drinking tonight. You don't mind, do you? People say, well, Pastor Warren, I think it's okay to drink. Why do you drink? I hope one of the religious people say, because I like the taste. Okay, if you like the taste, you can buy beer right over here, Jewel, without alcohol. Now why do you drink? Answer the question. Because you like the effect. What does the Bible demand that you don't have? The effect. It tells you never come under the influence of alcohol. By the way, if you like wine, you can get that without alcohol. You can drink. By the way, I noticed most people don't drink sewer water without alcohol, do they? Okay, I move on. They were probably thinking about stupid things like that. Next in your notes. Not only not getting it only has a few sources. I'm not trying to be mean to anybody here. It's a small crowd tonight because of the nature of the weekend and school. But let's just say this, folks. If you don't get it, if you sit in a church service year after year after year after year, you do understand there's only a few reasons why you don't get it. Read the first verse with me, John 10:27. Let's begin with a direct statement from Jesus. My sheep, what? And I know them, and? So if you sit in church year after year after year, or the person that sits in front of you on Sunday morning and sleeps. I got some people that just come here and just go to sleep. I mean, that's just what they do. I have other people that come here, they're not planning on obeying God. If you sit here year after year after year, here's the characteristic of Christians. Christians hear his voice. Christians follow him. There aren't two kinds of Christians. So there's only two options. One option is you're a person that thinks you're his sheep, but you're really not a sheep. Let's look and see what Jesus said in other places. We'll just stick with Jesus tonight. He says, I know that you're Abraham's seed. Yeah, but you seek to kill me because my word hath no place in you. I speak that which I have seen with my father, and you do that which you have seen with your father. They answered and said unto him, Abraham is our father. Jesus saith unto them, well, if you were Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham. Duh. But now you seek to kill me, a man that hath told you the truth, which I have heard of God. This did not Abraham. You do the deeds of your father. Then said they to him, we be not born of fornication. We have one father, even God. Jesus said unto them, if God were your father, you would love me. For I proceed forth and come from God. Neither came I of myself, but he sent me. Why do you not understand my speech? Look at me. I'm going to say this as clearly as Lake County can hear it tonight. If you don't hear the word of God and you continue down your path over time, there's only two choices. And the second one is better, but it's not much. Either you are a person that just can't hear his voice. And if you can't hear his voice, according to Jesus, you're not his child. I mean, you hear this over and over and over, and you just keep doing the same thing. Folks, a legalist can't get it. They never get it. Well, let's read that whole verse. Why do you not understand my speech, even because you cannot hear my word? 8:47. He that is of God heareth God's word. Ye therefore hear them not, because ye are not of God. The second possibility is the next two verses. I think for some Christians, they have grown up around religion and emotions, and they never realize, please look up here, we'll get to the verses. They never realize Christianity is not about all the emotions. Christianity, emotions happen. Christianity is about a living relationship with Christ and his word. And the way I grow is by hearing it, understanding it, living it, putting it into practice. So 1 Timothy 4:15 says, meditate upon these things. These things ought to be things you talk to yourself about. If you hear but you never do, either you're an unsaved person or you're directly a person that doesn't know how to meditate. You don't know how to grab something, think about it over and over and over. In your notes, 1 Timothy 4:15, I said this in Teacher's In-Service. Amy said I was cranky. I'm always cranky, Amy, so that doesn't really change anything. Meditate upon these things. Verse 15, give thyself wholly to them. I said in Teacher's In-Service, these two phrases, a way of thinking about them is this. To meditate on something is this, folks. That needs to inhabit your mind. So you get the idea in your heart and mind until it's yours. It inhabits your mind. The next phrase has the idea of you inhabiting it. So you grab a truth, an idea. Sanctify them through thy word. Thy word is truth. You grab a truth and it inhabits your mind, your heart. You think about it. You talk about it. You dwell on it. To the place where you step forward and you inhabit that truth. 2 Timothy 2, verse 7. Consider what I say, and the Lord give thee understanding in all things. Friend, legalists don't get it. Make sure, look at me, you get it. And if you don't get it, look at me, if you don't get it, week after week, year after year, you better ask a question. Why am I never getting it? Why can't I hear something and do it? Why do I hear this over and over and over and just never do it? My guess, there's a sheep problem. We think we're sheep and we're something else. Or the only other thing I can think of is we're not knowing how to... Let me just say this. Churches don't teach meditation. Churches teach emotions. You get a song director that gets you pumped up and everybody's happy. Everybody goes home loving Jesus right back to what they did when they came to church. That's not Christianity. I don't know what that is. It's not heart religion. Number two, legalists also don't get over it. Make sure you get over it. Mark 7, verse 18. And he saith unto them, are you so without understanding also? Do you not perceive that whatsoever thing from without entereth into a man, it cannot defile him? Because it entereth not into the cardia, the heart, but it entereth into the cholia, you know, the coils, the intestine, the stomach. I mean, don't you get that? It's not that, oh my goodness, you ate pork, the world's going to end. I can remember even when I came to Zion in 1996, we still had restaurants in Zion that would not sell bacon and sausage made of pork. It was made of other things because, man, if you ate pork, the world ended. This is exactly the opposite of what Jesus is saying. If you eat some pork, that just enters into the stomach. No big deal. It's that heart that's a matter. So make sure you get over your religion and your false teaching. Look what it says. He says it goeth out into that Greek word. It's a big Greek word. It simply means the privy, or whatever term you use. Is privy a good word? I remember when I was in the Philippines for the first time. I've heard this all over the world, but when I was in the Philippines, somebody talked about the comfort room, and I'm like, the what? The comfort room. When we were in Scotland, I've already told you this story in the past, I was in a restaurant, not a restaurant, I was in some place in the north of Scotland, and I asked for the restroom, and the person sent me to the restaurant, because in Scotland they call it the loo. I don't know whatever you call it, it simply goes into the loo. It doesn't really affect you. Let's continue reading. Purging all meats. Verse 20 says, that which cometh out of the man, that which begins in the heart, that's what defiles the man. Why you do what you do. Legalists can't seem to get over what they have learned from somewhere. There's three different forms of they're overlapping forms of legalism. One form of legalism is this: my faith is all my traditions. And that's their whole religion. You bump into these people, and I'm going to talk about Jewish tradition, but they have all kinds. They don't eat pork. So the first thing they want you to know is, I don't eat pork, and that's what's significant. Or they don't eat shellfish. Or they don't mix milk and meat. I actually heard a person, you guys don't know about milk and meat. That's part of kosher law. Some of you are looking at me like you're from outer space. Oh, no, they have, in an Orthodox home, they have two sets of everything because the meat goes on one set and the milk products go on another set, and those two products do not touch each other lest you're contaminated, and that is your religion. I actually heard a guy recently say he was taught as a kid that if he drank milk, there had to be a gap even in the partaking of meat products and milk products, lest they get commingled, and if they got commingled, you were defiled. That's your traditions. Next, this is a little closer to home. My faith, it should be, oh my goodness, Frenchy. My faith should be, are my, R-A-R-E, my, they are my standards. They are my standards, they are my rules. This would include any kind of thing that you run into, that I have run into. From a woman that cannot cut her hair, that has to have it in a bun, as I talked about the first grade teacher or that my little sister had as a teacher. Or to women that had to have long single color dresses, or King James only, or conspiracies, or short hair on men, or no hippie hair, all the goofball stuff that people do. Now, you thought you were off the hook, but now I'm going to put you on the hook. Because this is where we live. In this room, we have nobody that I know of into traditional stuff. We don't have any goofy people with King James onlyism and all that, but we have a lot of this. I call it this. My faith is a checklist. Do you know what a checklist is? You're going to know. Well, I put some of them in your notes. By the way, do me a favor. You got your pen? Got your pen? Check them off. Because this is how, and by the way, you were taught to think this way, and you think everything is okay as long as I can go down the checklist. So we start with what? Well, I'm at church. Do your check. I'm at prayer meeting. I'm an Awana worker. I serve. I'm part of the choir. By the way, are all these things good things? What's the problem? Answer the question. Check them off. None of them have anything to do with a relationship with God. None of them have anything to do with matters of the heart. You can spend 6 days watching television from morning to night. You can drink. You can cuss. You can not lead your family. You can be a ridiculous father or mother. You can do anything you want. Check, check, check. Because none of them touch on the heart. And this is the reason, if you grow up in that environment, well, you'll know in just a moment, it's not going to be pleasant. There's something that is so obvious, and folks, you don't know you do it until you see it. Let's continue. Right language, that's important. Don't smoke. First of all, a person that smokes a day, do you have that much money? Number two, do you really want to smoke and ruin your lungs? Yeah. You don't drink? I think it's probably a good idea not to smoke, not to drink. Don't dance, and if I ever see Frenchie dance one more time in my entire lifetime, I think I will die. You don't chew? But I have something in your notes. How do you know this is you? May I ask? Please look up here. I saw it this morning. You didn't see it. I saw it this week. I'm not going to tell you who, but I saw a family. I'm like, oh, come on. Your kids are a wreck. Your life is a wreck. But you show up at church to do your check it off. Every time you feel guilty, what do you do? Look at me. Do you get to matters of the heart? Do you wonder why you never understand the Bible? Do you wonder why you never apply the Bible? Do you just check more check marks? Answer the question. So what will happen here is I'll say something about the home. We're going to do that tonight. And the guilty people will show up at church during the week and serve because they think by serving, they have eliminated the guilt. Here's the problem. Diagnosis, treatment, and prognosis are connected. Your children problems, your grandchildren problems have nothing to do with check marks. You're not getting to matters of the heart. You're leaving the heart the way it always was. And check, check, and check. I'll read it again. By the way, do you know who you are? Do you know who you are? I saw it this week because I saw some guilt in people. I'm not mad at you. I saw some guilt, and then I know what will happen. You'll check off a few more things, and that'll make you feel innocent. My friend, we don't solve problems, and we don't grow in grace by checking things off. So the moment they feel guilty, or you feel guilty, what do? A few more checks. You do a few more checks. So you serve more. I actually remember a person, it's that idiot Bob Gray from Texas. Somebody was having marital problems, and his question was, are they going soul winning? Well, here's the problem. Marital problems and witnessing are not connected. It's important to witness, but it'd be good to have something to witness about other than blabbing your mouth trying to prove you're right. It would be good to have something to witness to that God has changed your life as opposed to just talking. But for them, this is how you solve your problems. Check, check, check. Go soul winning more. Here was Jack Hiles. Give more, go more, serve more, do more. And guess what happened every time somebody started feeling guilty? But nothing ever changed for the heart. The heart was left alone. Is anybody awake? Do you know yourself? Do you know how you react? Most of us are more interested in our check marks than we are really knowing the Lord. Strange. Example, you have problems with your children, grandchildren, marriage, your mind, your lust, your passions, etc., etc. What do you do? Well, first of all, you don't know what to do. Secondly, you can't get to the heart. You just can't get to the heart. You don't know that this is a heart matter, friend. I'm going to demonstrate in a moment that if you have problems with your children or grandchildren, 100% your problems, look at me in the eyes, with your children are your heart. But that's not what you're going to go after. If you're a checkmark person, if you're in this legalism light, I'm not saying you're not saved. If you're over here, you just go back to, well, I'll come to church and work 3 days this week and it'll be better. You'll feel better, but nothing's changed. I'll come to church more. I'll check off more things on the list. Friend, that won't help in your notes. So, you're having problems with your children or grandchildren or et cetera, et cetera. You don't know what to do. You can't get to the heart, so what do? You keep going back to the externals, and you do more and more and more and more and more of the externals. My wife already knows this. After having attended First Baptist Church and Hiles Anderson College for 5 years, at the end of that time, looking back as an old man, I know one thing for sure. Jack Hiles' goal was never for you to change or grow. His goal was for you to do more, give more, and go more. How do I know that? Because that's all he ever preached. And that's the reason you have catastrophe after catastrophe. Now here, take a breath. What I believe is most churches like this weren't as bad as that, but they were the same kind of churches. We just do more check marks. We never get to matters of the heart. So everything stays the same. In your notes, I'm not going to read these. There is a translational difference in every single modern translation other than the King James. It is, in Greek, a hanging phrase. The King James, and I'll just read these, just the highlighted part, says, purging all meats. Certainly the first word is correct in its translation. Meats is wrong in the sense that we think meat, we think beef, pork, chicken. It's talking about solid food. But every other translation, the modern translation, that's reasonable and some not reasonable, translate it like this. Thus purifying all foods. Thus he declared all foods clean. Thus he declared all foods clean. In saying this, Jesus declared all foods clean. This he said, making all meats clean. ASV 1901, so it's a little older. New Revised Standard Version, the liberal version. Thus he declared all foods clean. Folks, I'm not going to debate this or discuss this. This modern translation is proper and the King James is wrong. Just that simple. This is the reason when you get to Acts chapter 10 and Peter's having this vision, he should have already gotten this from Jesus. Meaning, I've already cleansed all food. You can eat food. Food is not what defiles you. But we'll move on from that. Number three, legalists don't get after it. Make sure you get after it. Get after matters of the heart. And he said, that which cometh out of the man, that defiles him. It's the why. It's the drive. It's the passions that come out of you, far from within, out of the heart of men. Proceed. Evil thoughts. Adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, which means out of control kind of behaviors, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from where, friend? From within and defile the man. I say in your notes, Bible-believing Christians always begin with the heart. Now, everyone look at me. In 5 minutes, hopefully, I'm going to be done. Here's what I want you to do. If you have not memorized every single verse in this passage, here's a place to start tonight. After you memorize every passage, then you begin to meditate. Meditate means this. You begin to talk to yourself about these verses. Psalm 19, verse 14, let the words, notice the word words is what? Plural. Let the words of my mouth and the singular, what? Meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight. O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. By the way, look at me. Memorize the verse and start, look at me. Get to. So if you know your kids are doing wrong, or your grandkids, or your whole family's a wreck, please don't just come up here and serve more at church. Checklist Christianity doesn't change anything. You don't feel as guilty, but stuff is the same. You get home tonight and you begin with matters of this, the heart. Proverbs 4:23, keep thy what? Most of us know what's on television tonight and you're hoping I'm getting over. You know what you're going to do all week, every program you're going to watch, but you can't keep control of this. Keep thy heart with all diligence. For look, what does Proverbs say? What? That, who does that sound like? Who does that sound like? Where do you think Jesus got it from? You think he just made it up. Proverbs already says it, friend. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. When you see, friend, when you look me in the eyes, when you see, I'll wait. When you see a man that I like going to prison probably for life for child porn, that didn't show up in one day. That was who knows how many years of playing religious games. Or I don't think he was a game player. You know what I think he was? He had his heart, and he had a part over here, and he had built concrete around that little part, and he didn't even look in that little part. Let's continue to read. Proverbs 23:19, hear thou, my son, and be wise, and guide thine heart in the way. Psalm 119, verse 11, thy words have I hid in my heart, that I might not sin against thee. By the way, one of the greatest prayers in all the Bible, which is what? Search me, O God, and know my... By the way, God already knows your heart. He doesn't need to search your heart. When you pray this prayer, what are you actually praying? Somebody tell me. I'll wait. Yeah, I mean, God knows what's in your heart. When you pray this prayer, you're asking God to search your heart so you know. I've already told you about some of my rotten, stinking heart tonight. How about you? See, I'm not very positive about human nature. Are you? I'm pretty sure in the best person in this room, there's plenty of evil. And I'm pretty sure with the gasoline poured on that, and in the right setting, we can all do most anything. Why would I think that, Mike Rock? Yes, and you know what? I've been around a while. I've pretty much seen us do everything, haven't I? I've seen the best people do the stupidest things. I've seen the best people do the most evil things. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Friend, this ought to be every place you look for the next month. Because this isn't, I feel guilty, check, check, check. This is, I can get back to the matters of the heart. Because this is heart religion. Legalism never, look at me. We have two kinds of Christianity today in America. We got legalism, it never touches the heart. We got this that's emotional, but it never touches what the Bible calls the heart. Because what the Bible calls the heart is that center of your being. Out of it, everything comes. So when you're angry, when you're jealous, when you're bitter, when you're rageful, when you blame people, it comes out of the heart. Neither one of these touch the heart. Of course not. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Proverbs says, "My son, keep thy father's commandments and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon what?" I ought to be able to come here next Sunday morning and have people talking to me about what they've been meditating on and how they're now inhabiting that stuff. And I shouldn't have people that want to be guilty and do some more checklist stuff. Well, let me serve more. I guess that'll be better. I'll come to church more. Folks, church hasn't changed people. Heart-to-heart religion does. God searching our heart. So, I have in your notes, when having difficulty with kids, what do you do? You got two kinds of Christians, basically, in the evangelical world. You have liberalism light that can never get around to obeying God, and you have legalism light which can never do anything but obey its traditions. This group does pretty good carrying the right Bible, right, having the right hairdos. But anything past that, they're just oblivious. This group is great. Oh, they're so loving. They're so kind. They're so happy. But everything's the same. By the way, folks, what do you do? Now, if I was to ask you, you're out in public and you meet another Christian, that Christian's struggling with their children, what are you going to tell them? I'm going to go immediately after matters of the heart. I want you to look at me. I've been around a long time, Mike. This is what I've also found. The sins of the parents generally comes down through the children. Bitter parents make bitter children. Bitter children make bitter grandchildren because you pass on your bitterness stories. Nobody ever touched the heart. By the way, most of these people were serving. They were attending. They were checklisting, but nothing ever touched this. Well, it's in your notes. So having trouble and difficulties with your kids, do you have any trouble with your kids? By the way, I don't have any trouble with my kids. You say, why? I gave my youngest kid to Aaron. She's now his trouble. I don't hear a word from Aaron. In your notes, what do you do when you have trouble with kids? Well, if you're a liberalism light, you do nothing. If you're from the legalism light, you do the same old things. You know what the same old things is? Same old things you always do. Well, let's go to church and serve. You probably need to work in Awana. By the way, working in Awana doesn't fix anybody's problems. It's a checklist solution. Remember, diagnosis, treatment, and prognosis go together. And if you try to treat something with something that doesn't affect the problem, I see this in my circles. It used to be this. If a person doesn't go to church, what you need to do is give them a job at church. Why? Why would you ever do that? Then their guilt is assuaged, but nothing has changed. Matters of the heart haven't changed. Wow. Next. So, nothing. Oh, I skipped the next one. Excuse me. Well, of course, if you're having problems with your kids, you could blame someone else. That's usually good, isn't it? Yes? Or the next underneath that, same old thing. Or next, more of the same old thing. Generally, what I see is people do more of the same old thing. You know, it's like, well, let's serve some more. Let's go some more. Let's do some more. It's like, that isn't fixing anything. Or when it gets desperate, something crazy. I'm going to ask this question. What do Bible-believing Christians who get matters of the heart do? Well, I want you to do something with me, and I'm done tonight. I have preached on this passage till I'm blue in the face. If you do not start obeying it, I don't know what I should do as a pastor. And I'm being serious. Am I preaching to people who will not obey God? in your notes. Here's what heart Christians do. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And thou, you, shall love the Lord thy God with all thy what? This always come back to the heart. And with all thy soul and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be. If you're having problems with your children, where is the place you start, parents? With yourself. The problem isn't your children, the problem is you. The problem is always the heart. This is called heart religion, as opposed to legalism, where you blame other people, or you just keep getting them to do the check marks. But how do people stay in this church for years and sleep every sermon? Have you ever wondered? Nothing here. Check, check, check. By the way, here's the action. You love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and the words which I command thee this day shall be in your heart. You begin letting God get to the heart. You get to the place where God gets to who you are. And then verse 7 says, thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. My friend, you start with yourself. You start with your heart. You start with what God is changing you and reaching into your heart. And you start talking about that with your children when you're sitting in your house and when you're walking by the way and when you're lying down and when you're rising up. Look at me. You either do that or you don't. And if you don't, you have to ask the question, why don't I? Am I a person that cannot hear? Let's stand.